This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, Wednesday, November 29th, 2006.
Call the November meeting of the University Assembly to order. Please, University Assembly members, look at your minutes from the October meeting, see if there's any changes that you need to make. They're in your folder. If there's any changes, please mention them at the end of the meeting. Otherwise, the minutes will be accepted. Moving on, first, the University Assembly would like to respond to President Scorton's letter. Everyone should have received it. It was sent out to the university last Monday. Basically, President Scorton sent out an email to the university discussing the campus code of conduct and how the University Assembly is related in the process. So we are charging the Codes and Judicial Committee of the University Assembly to look at the Krauss report. If you guys picked up the handouts in the back, University Assembly members, this is in your packets. This is being presented by Dr. Ellis Lowe. So this is the part that's on the PowerPoint that applies to the University Assembly. Now I propose to engage the community in a thorough, timely discussion about what is best for Cornell University with respect to the campus code of conduct. Given its valued role and its informed knowledge of the strengths and shortcomings of the campus code, I hereby ask the University Assembly to gather community input and submit views and recommendations concerning the April 2006 report to my office by April 1st, 2007. To further facilitate this process, I am establishing a working group to collaborate with the University Assembly and to assist me in my review of the anticipated revisions of the code. Therefore, if you move that the UA delegate the gathering of said community input using such methods as it deems appropriate to the Codes and Judicial Committee. The CJC is encouraged to add additional non-voting ad hoc members representative of the various constituencies as necessary for the sole purpose of dealing with the gathered views and helping with the generation of reports. Members of the President's working group will be also added as non-voting ad hoc members so to make sure that the administration's views and recommendations are recognized. The final report summary data and recommendations to be submitted to UA no later than March 7, 2007. For a quick review about the Codes and Judicial Committee, basically what it does is it makes recommendations and changes to the campus code of conduct through a very detailed and thorough process. It also helps staff the University Hearing and Review Board. The CJC has already approached the University Assembly with five ways we'd like to approach the Krauss report. Basically, these five we can see on the PowerPoint. The first is that the code presents clear parameters for behavior to ensure that the institution's purpose. Second, that the code states that the parameters for behavior in simple and clear language without abridging rights. Third, that appropriate timetables for process be respected. Fourth, that an equitable, fair, independent judicial process be maintained. And fifth, that the independent support of the JA's office and its communication with the community is sufficient. And this was an email. Through an email through Kathleen Hughes, our chair of the Codes and Judicial Committee.
There's a motion.
Is there a motion?
Well, you read the motion.
Yes.
But you left it out.
Okay.
Before voting on the motion, there is an additional sentence that was not present in the overhead that you showed, but should be present on your copies. And it basically states that, let's see, no later than March. Oh, maybe it was all covered. The CJC shall at its next meeting on Wednesday, December 6th, 2006, develop and approve a process to develop the report, including a schedule of meetings. Okay, that needs to be added. So, I propose this as a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Approved?
We have discussion.
Oh, yeah, discussion. Go ahead.
couple of things. One, I just want to make sure that are we only charging the CJC to look at the crop report, or are we charging to look at the entire code? Like, because I know that much of the history beyond the crop report started with former President Lehman talking about an honor code, and I would like to, they possibly also have, while we're looking at this, they also maybe have the CJC look at an honor code before they'll look at the possibility of an honor code, put it on the table, please.
This motion dealt specifically with the charge given us by President Skorton, which referred directly to the Krauss report and not to previous honor code or codes of academic integrity deliberation. So, no, this motion has nothing to do with that. In fact, depending upon what the outcome of this committee is, the point may be moved, because we're certain parts of the Krauss report to be accepted, there would be no more CJC to look at any honor code. Okay, so to charge the CJC to look at an honor code is like asking the condemned to build his own gallows, because we may not have a CJC to look at it. So that's why I framed the motion directed specifically at the president's request. So no, it wouldn't include that, Henry.
Okay. And we also think that we would like to have the CJC be in the best position to look at the charge from President Clinton, as opposed to the UA itself.
I know
the responsibilities of the CJC. I know that in prior times there's been issues of, that we have a committee to do work, and then there's the full UA has had many questions and many concerns, so I'm wondering whether this is, like for actually transportation issues, we in fact looked at some of those issues as an entire body as opposed to submitting it to certain committees. And I just wanted to open it up for discussion. Everybody thinks the CJC is perfectly capable and that this is the great best place, then fine.
I personally think it's the best place, but for no other reason than there are members of the CJC who are not members of the University Assembly,
right.
Okay, but have special knowledge and experience with the code, and are in a better position than the UA as a whole to handle this issue. Their report will have to come to the UA to be thoroughly discussed at our meetings before the UA submits it to the president anyway. So the UA would probably wind up forming a working committee anyway, because I don't see that the entire UA could be involved given the time that we have to do this. So I think the CJC is the most appropriate organization to do this.
How do you...
Well, can we have the CJC come report to us monthly and make it a large part of our deliberations?
Yeah, although since they're a standing committee, they're on the agenda every meeting anyway,
right.
And that's the only thing they're probably going to be doing.
Right. So
we would
so
get
we
it anyway.
Space for ourselves to
yep. Okay.
Make as much time.
Anyone have any other comments on this?
Call for a vote.
I call for a vote.
I just got here. I just joined the stupid question. But if the Krauss report envisages eliminating the JA's office, then point five is a little strange. It might be settled by saying the JA's office board is equivalent and it's an indication of something like that. Because this sort of already assumes that that the present situation is wrong.
Oh, okay. But that's actually not part of the motion
okay.
Anyway. Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
So,
they need to submit it by March 7th.
No, I mean, the communication starting at the top is coming from the CPC. From the CPC. It's not dated.
What is it?
I don't think
it's coming down after November 14th, obviously.
It's not dated. It's not good to date.
It's November 15th.
All right.
Okay. All in favor?
Sure.
Yes, Katie.
I think one of the things about the crash report and the purpose for the conduct, I think it's extremely important to get this address the issues that are within it by the end of the year. Because I think that if you push it past the summer and kind of push it to next year, it's going to lose a lot of steam and a lot of attention. And I think it's very important to really address this year. And setting deadlines, I think, is extremely important to get this and to address it. And it's been in a year, Barbara Krause has looked at it. You know, she had a year to look at it, make the recommendations, and you know, it's just a second step in the kind of three or four step process that we're going through. So I think that, you know, by setting these deadlines, we actually may get some things done on this by the end of the year. I think that that's one of the things we're really looking to do and a goal that we set ourselves up in the beginning of the year for that. So.
Yeah, can I just do one more follow-up?
Me too.
I mean, I guess one of my concerns that I'm raising is that it was the first step in the process, my understanding, did not really involve the University Assembly and the Code of Judicial Committee. Had the President Rawlings at that time gone to the Code of Judicial Committee and said, look, we'd like for you to look at these issues and see what you have to say about it, then, you know, that would have been a long time ago when the Code of Judicial Committee could have looked at it carefully rather than having a report that was done outside of the University Assembly and the representative process, you know, for you to be given the kind of report that's already very significant without the University Assembly having had the chance to actually give a first view of whether there was a report ever even needed. And so, you know, yeah, it's along the process is far along the way, but only I think because the administration did not go to the assembly as it seems they should have to get to the process in motion.
Okay, we need to move on from this point. If we change, instead of saying the final report, if we say a progress report with summary data, will data and recommendation should be submitted to the University Assembly, and then keep going. All dates will stick unless otherwise notified. Is that acceptable to you?
See, without belaboring it, if in my opinion, the CJC was going to spend time on all of the major issues, you'd be right. But in fact, from the point of view of the CJC, the only thing that really matters to discuss is the first issue. The process, for instance, off-campus jurisdiction. If that had been raised without anything to do with eliminating the independence of the JA, it would have gone before the Code and Judicial Committee. Any member of the campus community can put it there. We would have an open forum on each issue. It could take a year, and there have been things where that's happened. Okay? It was, I'll say our feeling, but it was really my feeling, that to spend a lot of time discussing specific issues in committee that might be made moot if, in fact, the CJC is eliminated simply because the code is taken away from us would be a waste of the committee's time. What I would hope is that certainly get input on all of the issues that are raised by the Krauss report, but from the point of view of the University Assembly, if we were to recommend, oh yes, let's implement eliminating the JA as an independent entity and moving the code away from the University Assembly, well then that would make our life really easy because we wouldn't have to spend a whole lot of time looking at all of these other specifics. So I'm not sure that setting a deadline to look at that issue, while at the same time gathering information on all the other ones, couldn't be met by the deadline set. But I'm very happy to change the motion. Marty?
Yeah, I'm Marty Pass, I'm on the CJC. Related, for example, to the point that you made about bringing the honor code in. The honor code in can be considered bringing the honor code into the realm of the code, the judicial, you know, the code, death code, can be addressed given the current situation, what we have in the current situation, without a major change or renovation of the system. And what Ellis is, the point that Ellis is trying to make is that most of the other recommendations of the Krauss report can also be addressed in that way. We would expect in the CJC that our main consideration would be not how to address every issue brought up by the Kraft report, but the basic and main one, which is, will the system be moved to the administration, the vice president's office, and taken away from the UA? That's the key point. Because what we have in place now is a system that does everything. It is prepared to address everything else in the Kraft report. It's prepared to and has been addressing these issues for all the 10 years I've been on the committee. And so the key issue is to decide at the meetings, and that's why a fast timetable is possible, whether or not the UA, one could say, accedes to having its authority over the campus code taken away from it. And CJT, in my sense, in my view of things, and all those 5 points address this, is being asked to advise the UA about whether or not the CJT is, whether or not the UA is, you know, it's appropriate for the UA to have its authority over the code taken away from it.
Okay, University Assembly members, we need to vote on this motion, and then we will move to the open forum. All in favor? All opposed? Okay. The motion is passed.
No, wait a minute.
Okay.
Abstain, because I didn't think there had enough discussion.
Now we're going to go to the open forum. As it's going to run, each speaker will have 2 minutes to come up and state their opinion. At 2 minutes, the bell will ring. Ellis Lowe is timing. The University Assembly members will then have a chance to respond. So if you have comments to make, please come sit in the first row. That's how people can line up. When you come up, please state your name and if you have a position. You want to come?
Abby Cohn, faculty member in Arts and Sciences. Faculty member in Arts and Sciences. I'm concerned about the process and the procedural things that have been put in motion, both by the way that former interim president Rawlings initiated the Kraft report, and the way that Sport has now responded by, in effect, following that path. I'm concerned about the fact that in that document, the UAA's role has seemed to have been relegated to one of fact-finding as opposed to the primary body with authority. I'm concerned about the constitution of the working group and the authority of that group, and I'm particularly concerned about the formation of that constitution and the membership of that. I think it sorely underrepresents both faculty and student input, both those individuals who might represent that viewpoint, such as the dean of students, who is not included, as well as the vice provost for undergraduate affairs, who is not included, as well as broader representation. Thank you.
Anyone care to address?
If in fact the UA does discuss this issue every month until March or through March, then I hope each and every one and each and every person's friends come to the meeting to express your concerns specifically about the Kraft report and what should happen. And I would like to feel that there'll be enough of a vocal minority that on the campus, and even perhaps the majority would be nice, that that if reason was not listened to, then reason should be listened to.
Any other University Assembly members? Okay, so next speaker would like to go.
Elizabeth Sanders from the Government Department, and of course I think I'm a political scientist and think about procedures and governance a lot. This whole process is going to consume an enormous amount of time for the faculty, staff, and students who are going to care about it, for those of you on this committee. And to me, it's one of the things that makes life at Cornell demoralizing because we are constantly working on the administration's agenda, and they try to do things that in the end turn out to be bad ideas, and we have to consume all this time trying to convince them. If the procedure has been violated, if the administration has taken over the function of the University Assembly and the President Judicial Committee, then why not just say that? Why not just take a vote at some point after you've talked about it on whether you see the whole process as illegitimate, whether you think that the present constitution we work under is just fine and we don't need to abandon it for the Cambodian model or the Chinese model or something else. Because but what is envisioned here is to move drastically and sharply away from the rights-based model and with judicial independence and so on that is so ingrained in hundreds of years of American and British political culture towards some kind of re-education model in which many rights are just thrown out the window. I can't imagine why you want to go along with that. If we look at the origination of this process, as I understand it, I heard somebody say this yesterday in a meeting, that there have been two instances in which the administration decided to move by itself without having the normal take care of the campus code, to move by itself to propose a drastic overturning of the code. And the last one was after the protest about divestment in South Africa. That protest failed. We didn't go along. We can't claim any credit for the democratization of South Africa. But the most recent one, apparently this whole process was initiated by Hunter Rawlings and Susan Murphy, just after the Redbud Woods protest. The motivation clearly seemed to diminish protests, to scare students and faculty to death so that they won't feel like exercising their rights as criticism of administrative action. Now, I think that's really pretty terrible, pretty undemocratic, pretty autocratic, and I don't know why you want to go along with that at all. Why don't you just take a vote and decide, thank you, President Scorton, for sending these ideas to us. We'll have to come to the Judicial Committee, look and see if there's anything that we need to change in the present code, but otherwise we will abide by our Constitution.
I want to agree with you for about 90%. I think Hunter Rawlings was the worst thing that ever happened to Cornell University, yet I have hope in President Scorton. And to do this is because I have hope in President Scorton. I think that this was made strictly to punish Redbud people, etc. We could call ourselves Cornell University of Middle Management. We don't want to treat the leaders of tomorrow that are going to invent their own rules that are better than what we have, but just we want to train people to follow our own rules. The fact that civil disobedience is set up as one part of this thing, where violent crime, rape, and not leaving a building during a fire drill is stuck together as other issues, is insane. It's insane. It shows that the administration that asked for this report has no sense, period. But I believe in President Scorton. And I want to just read one line from Martin Luther King that he says after reading Thoreau in college. I became convinced that non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good. And not only should we be encouraging civil disobedience when it's right, but we should be discouraging it at all costs. Now, civil disobedience is willing to go to jail or not pay taxes in Thoreau's case, willing to accept punishment for doing what you believe is right. That doesn't mean that the administration can't say, gee, you are right, we're giving you amnesty. There's nothing about civil disobedience that say the administration can't learn unless that administration is brain dead. Period. Let's see.
Are you done, Randy? There's been a vigorous discussion in the University Assembly addressed or directed at exactly what you raised. The University Assembly is put in a very peculiar position because there's a feeling that somehow we should be unbiased, and in fact there's no reason for us to be unbiased because we know that we have the power and that it's been, basically, we've been worked around. This is not the first time this has happened. It's happened with Campus Store. It's happened with Gannett. It's happened with religious work. It's happened with transportation. We know that. The problem is that the University Assembly, if asked by any member of the community to look at anything of relevance to the entire community, has a responsibility to act on it, whether we like it or not. So on the one hand, we have to look like we're unbiased. Personally, I'm biased. You know, I wouldn't be on the University Assembly if I didn't think that the system was really good the way it is. But to just say we can't do it, I think that's a bad precedent, because anybody can come and ask us to do things. That's what we're here for. And hopefully we have the power given us in the charter, which, I mean, I'm talking for myself. I've always wanted to do things like we have administrative control, legislative control, over transportation. Hey, let's pass a motion that there will be no parking fees for the next year and see what happens. We have the authority. Let's push it. If the trustees want to take it away, that's something else. But we've never really wanted to be that adversarial. So some of us would like to be really adversarial. Others are more guarded and much more reasonable than myself. So, but I actually agree with you 100%, not just 90%. But that's speaking for me, not the University Assembly.
Yes, Leon.
Yeah, I just wanted to also say, is it Professor Sanders, that I agree with you 100%, and thank you for sharing your thoughts, well thought out ideas and opinions.
Do any other university members have any comments? Okay, with the next speaker. Please come
through. I'm Eric Schaefer from the English Department. I published an editorial piece in The Sun on November 17th, which criticized this proposed code. And I also sent a copy of that to the committee. I certainly agree with the comments of my colleagues here. It seems to me that if the letter of procedure hasn't been violated, the spirit of procedure has been violated by creating a working collaborative group, which seems is constituted by the very people who will take over this code if this proposal is passed. I think that itself is cause for alarm and cause for resistance on the part of the University Assembly. Susan Murphy, the chair of that committee, as I understand, it's her office that stands to take over the code if this is passed. So I think there is a warrant for resistance, and I think if bodies like this don't resist when laws that have been laid down, authority that has been granted, is being violated, either in letter or in spirit, then we're in trouble in terms of governance here. I, of course, object to the subversion of the independence of the code. I object to it being taken out, really, of faculty oversight in a radical kind of way. Let me read you from the current code, which I also stated in my letter. It says, the code is based on freedom to teach and to learn, to express oneself and to be heard, and freedom to assemble and lawfully protest peacefully are essential to academic freedom and the continuing function of the university as an educational institution. These, in the bylaws of the university, are faculty concerns. They have to do with education and the environment for education. So to move this code out of faculty oversight, in fact, essentially out of real faculty participation into a non-academic area, is simply to violate the fundamental function of the code, of the faculty in these matters. And I think that needs to be taken into account. I am concerned that the full faculty complement is not on the UA right now, that you're missing two members. I understand two more have joined it. And I think that's a matter of concern, too, as you begin to deliberate, that there should be a full complement of faculty representation on this committee. I don't work with hope or without hope. I've learned that. I do a lot of political work around the country. What I work with is what's on the table, what's been done, And so far, what's been done is not hopeful. Let me put it that way.
So any university assembly members want?
Kathleen, you can.
I thought there's seven members.
Right, but UA only is going to consider this report, right?
Right.
You're referring back to the UA.
Right.
There's not a full complement of faculty members on the UA.
Right.
Are we only four or seven?
I think we're now five or seven. Needless to say, that having emailed a lot of people at the request of Sandy Sutton and the nominations committee, getting seven faculty has been, I think the only way that I could have got seven faculty, if I promised that include that joining the UA would give you hockey tickets, then I could have got people to join. In a way, this is great, because suddenly it's pointed out that, hey, there is a university assembly, and we look forward to getting more faculty members. We had reached the point where we were actually considering looking at the numbers of representatives from each constituency, because we never had the full complement of working faculty members. We would have emeritus professors or people off on sabbatic that were there in title so that it looked like you had a full roster, but never participated at all. And so I look forward to more faculty actually participating, because at least in the charter we have some semblance of power should we find some mechanism to exercise it.
I'd also just like to make a few comments, and maybe Kathleen can also talk about this, that the Krauss report didn't drop from the sky. The CJC, in fact, Richard Helm and other people who have been chair of CJC have been looking at changing the campus code for years. In fact, they were getting ready to move forward with it, but knew what a big job it was. So, in fact, when President Lehman talked about the honor code, that was also something the UA was going to attack, and that was obviously a number of years ago. Then, in fact, when the Krauss, Barbara Krauss was appointed to do this, again, the UA was looking at taking action on the code. And in fact, my recollection was that we, in fact, embraced Barbara Krauss because she had the time and the effort to, in fact, look at the campus code, and that resources were certainly an issue in terms of the timing. And that the Barbara Krauss was appointed not in a vacuum. She talked to many of the constituents, and including the UA and the CJC, about her efforts. It wasn't, you know, a backroom deal that the administration was making. This was all in the open. We may disagree with the way the contents of the report, but this was not a surprise. And this is something we've been looking at for years. And so I just want to, you know, make sure everybody sort of understands that this wasn't some, you know, Rawlings trying to do an end run on the campus code on the UA, because again, if we had a concern about the Krauss report, we could have, you know, said something when the administration first appointed Barbara Krauss to look at this.
I think the section on civil disobedience was a surprise. I think
the section to eliminate the JA was a surprise.
I think your point is
that there was a consultation. Yes, indeed, you were talked to with several other people. The whole CJC was not, but that doesn't matter. The real problem is that this is not going to the UA. It may go to the president. The president could well have passed it on to the UA to say, this is the report that we got. What would you like to do with it? I think that's a major problem, but this is a way of getting to that point. What you've done is a way of getting to that point, perhaps.
If you have specific comments, please use the feedback mechanism on the website as well, or there's a comment box in the back if there's specific points of the Krauss report that you would like to comment on as well. Any other UA members have any comments? Would the next speaker please step forward?
My name is Jeff Patel. I'm a graduate student, but I'm also a student manager of three North Campus coffee shops, and two sets of concerns that are about these. I need someone to explain to me how the CJC and the working group will interact with each other. To a lot of people on campus, we found out that the CJC existed a few days ago, to be totally honest. And I'm not sure its composition really broadly reflects the community, especially then looking at the working group and thinking about how these two are going to interact. There aren't students on the working group. There aren't Greeks. There aren't athletes. There aren't faculty. Though some members of the working group are conversant in the campus code, surely some students who have been subject to the JIA are also conversant. So the big question is just the CJC and the working group, who's going to make the decision in the end? I don't think there's much clarity on that. And that's important because as a community, we should set the rules. Day Hall's third floor shouldn't set the rules for the community. Speaking as a student manager, the vice president for student and academic services is where the buck stops in campus life. And right now, Susan Murphy is my boss, in effect, and 45 employees of mine, she is our boss. An independent JA is really important because if our boss is also our judge, there's a lot of potential conflicts. Campus life employs hundreds of students on this campus. And what if there's a sexual harassment claim? It goes to the VP for SAS, who's also our boss. That's much more complicated than an independent observer judging those claims. And it's really important for students that their boss isn't also in charge of whether or not they'll stay in school, whether or not they'll get suspended, et cetera. So the independence of the JIA is really important, and we need some clarity on who's going to make a decision on this in the end. Is the CJC, do they have legislative power, or do the trustees have supreme authority? Who's really going to decide in the end? Thanks.
You have members have any comments? Kathleen?
Do you post when your meetings meet?
Yeah, there is a website that the meeting center has that lists our meetings and our agenda, and I believe it already has a meeting on
there. Assembly.cornell.edu, and you can get the UA and the committee CJC.
Or just Google Code of Judicial Cornell. And that's the only thing that comes up.
I like the simplicity of the last teacher's that the boss might be the judge. It seems to me for students, yes, it's important. And also for employees generally, where I believe their boss is the judge. Pretty much. I think so. So you're in a fortunate circumstance now, maybe, under the JA. There are parts of this university that are not covered by that, fortunately. For instance, that is potentially going to be taken away from.
Would the next speaker please step forward?
My name is Andy Cowan. I'm a second year law student here at Cornell. Last night, the Cornell Law Students Association Board voted unanimously to express a deep concern about the proposed changes in the code and appointed a committee to produce a formal response that will be addressed to this body when we produce it. And I don't formally represent the CLSA, but I know that I speak for many of my fellow students when I say that we are disturbed by changes in the code that expand the university's disciplinary power while at the same time removing many of the procedures that protect students from false accusations and unfair sanctions. We've talked a lot already tonight about sort of the procedure for revising the code and the proposed procedure for revising the code in the future. I'd like to talk a little bit about the proposed procedure for disciplinary actions under the Krauss report. Barbara Krauss wants to strip the code of terms and concepts related to the criminal justice system. And she tells us that it's appropriate to do that because Cornell's disciplinary system has a different goal. But what she ignores is that it also has many of the same goals as the criminal justice system, goals like fairness, and goals like preserving the integrity of the community by protecting due process. A misconduct hearing like a criminal trial is an intimidating process, and even if Krauss proposes it's changed something more like a conversation than like a trial, the student still stands in perilous sanctions up to and including expulsion. Right now, the university representative is an expert, and in fact an attorney, and Barbara Krauss proposes to strip the student of the right to an attorney. Right now, the student may elect to remain silent and have his or her attorney conduct the defense. But by stripping that right and imposing an obligation to cooperate, the new code forces the student to face the university's lawyer alone. My second major concern is that the proposed changes lower the burden of proof and disciplinary actions from clear and convincing evidence to a preponderance of the evidence. Those are legal terms, and what it means in practice is that clear and convincing evidence means you have to be firmly convinced, you have to be really sure. Preponderance of the evidence means you buy it. It means it's more likely than not that something is true. So what this means in practice is that lowering that bar means that more students will be disciplined on flimsier evidence. It means that the Office of Student Conduct will get it wrong more often than the JA does now and the hearing boards, resulting in more and harsher disciplinary actions against students who will sometimes be innocent. Even more so because an inarticulate student without an attorney may not be able to adequately present her case. Barbara Krauss says in her report that the preponderance standard creates an equal balancing of interest between the accused student and the community, but that totally misunderstands the point of a burden of proof. A standard of proof is not a comparative value judgment between the parties. It's a question of how sure do you have to be that you're making the right decision before you make a potentially life-altering sanction on an accused student. For sake of time, I will skip over my comments about off-campus jurisdiction and the amendment mechanism, but I think those are also serious concerns. And it's important to note what the Krauss report does not say. It does not say that we need to make these changes because the university is unsuccessful in keeping order. It does not say that we need to make these changes because too many people who misbehave are getting off. In fact, it's my understanding that the vast majority of students who are charged with misconduct have resolved their cases in a summary process similar to a plea bargain. Those few cases that go to a hearing board are the rare case in which there is a serious material dispute about what happened, and those are the cases where due process matters the most. The drafters of the current code and the founders of our country recognize that even well-intentioned administrators are prone to overreaching and that abuse of authority can happen anywhere, including Cornell. We have a set of well-thought-out procedural protections in place, and I would urge this assembly to reject any changes that do not retain those protections. Thank you.
Any comments?
That was great.
Next.
Sam.
I would like to hear what you skipped over. Thank you.
Can that be added to the minutes? Can you give us a copy?
Absolutely.
That'd be great. Thank you.
My two additional concerns were off-campus jurisdiction and the proposed amendment mechanism under the Krauss report. As to off-campus jurisdiction, the report says that the expansion of off-campus jurisdiction is driven by concerns about violence and sexual assault off-campus. It seems to me that actions of sexual assault and serious violence off-campus are well covered by the president's current option of invoking off-campus jurisdiction for exceptionally grave misconduct. The new standards, on the other hand, are vague. What sorts of actions seriously affect the health or safety of community members? Can the university bring internal disciplinary action for a student who drank too much and got sick over spring break in Cancun? Well, what if it's over spring break in Ithaca? Does that make a difference? Should it make a difference? What about apartheid? Even if the university does not currently intend to involve itself in every little incident involving students, the proposed changes open the door wide and don't set any meaningful boundary. As to the proposed amendment mechanism, the University Assembly is currently vested with the sole authority to amend the code, with the exception of Title II regulations for the maintenance of public order, which may be amended by the trustees on the advice and consent of the University Assembly. The Crouch Report proposes to move that amendment authority to the University Policy Office, which would make student, faculty, and staff input optional. Now, Cornell committed in 1969, after the Willard Strait takeover, to create a campus judicial system that was acceptable to all members of the community, and the UA represents the community to ensure that the code remains acceptable. By cutting the community out of the process, the proposed changes undercut the university's 1969 commitment and permanently relegate students to giving advice that the university may choose to ignore.
I'd like to say something about that policy committee. I guess it's, I was very influenced by the movie All the President's Men or something. Follow the money. And so that policy committee is under the Vice President for Financial Affairs. So I think you have to ask, like, what's considered bad? Does it cost the university money? And that's the clear and convincing evidence to me of this report.
Yeah, if you could email a copy of that to the university, something that would be great.
And you said that there was a further report that you were going to present or give to us in addition
to
that.
These are my comments. When we publish the comments officially of the Cornell Law Students Association, those will be transmitted to this assembly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Will the next speaker please step forward?
I'm Dan Brown from the Department of Animal Science at the College of Agriculture. Like I said, 3 points I'd like to make. First, regards the reach of the campus code of conduct. I think for a couple of reasons that it should embrace as within its jurisdiction students, employees, faculty, trustees, and administrators as being subject to the campus code of conduct for a couple of reasons. One, this is very common in other organizations and educational organizations from, I guess, middle school. The administration has declared they are subject to the code of conduct. And I think it would give a great deal of authority, legitimacy, if President Spartan were to say, hey, this is me too, this is everyone. The subject can aspire to high levels of ethics and is subject to censure if they don't. There's another reason to include administrators explicitly and trustees in the code of conduct, and that is that in the past, their conduct has not always been ethical and honorable. When I was a graduate student here in the 70s and went off campus or to other Ivy League institutions, we were constantly ripped by the famous case where Malott, President Malott, plagiarized his acceptance speech when he was sworn in 1950. This hurt the reputation of Cornell for a long time. Some of the older faculty might remember that. Some of the retired faculty might remember that. We don't have to go that far back. Just summer before last, there were numerous unethical, illegal, dishonorable, and dangerous decisions taken by members of the administration. And but for the forbearance of the police and the presence of Cornell faculty in Redbud Woods, there would have been injuries and a situation that would have made the Strait takeover forgotten. And for their efforts, the faculty was arrested. We'll get another dishonorable decision on the part of the administration. These were people who were there softening the passions of the students, witnessing and preventing the excesses of the administration, saving from themselves. There were students there who had a lot more passion and common sense, who were losing water far, far faster in that hot environment than they were taking in. And some of us were arrested carrying water to them and educating them about some of the basic physiology that was involved and what the heck they were up to. This can't occur again. This can never occur again. The
the specter of the mistreatment of the rest of the girls' faculty when carrying out educational and humanitarian activities, of course, was thrown out by the judge, thrown out later by the current district attorney, and was never brought to the JA because they knew an independent JA wouldn't have tolerated anything as ridiculous as that. I hope that's not why they want to eliminate an independent JA. So that would be the first point. I think this code of conduct needs to touch everything. The second is that both the JA and the police need to be absolutely independent. They should be, any member of the community needs to be able to call on them when necessary. If they see the law being broken, people's well-being are endangered, everybody should have equal access to call them and get their aid. They should not be the administration's troops in any sense. They should be independent. The same with the JA, especially the administration and trustees are to be included in the code of conduct. Obviously, they can't replace the judicial administrator. And the final point, I think that this body, the University Assembly, needs to be much more assertive when they make the recommendation, if they differ from the cross report's recommendation. They should make that very explicitly and instruct the president not to go forward with a proposal that includes the recommendation to cross report. Maybe you'll agree with that. Probably not, but you know. But if you don't, you need to be explicit. You have a great deal of power. Don't clip your own wings in that regard.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
Have you given thought whether the Cornell peace officers should be police officers under Peter Meskill, under the sheriff purview, or under the president of the university?
They're currently deputy sheriffs, as well as, well, that was some confusion. There's been some confusion in the past. I don't know. I'm a lifestyle patrician, so I'm not into, I don't know how drugs work. I think they would do best if they were independent, if they were not necessarily part of the sheriff's department, but they were subject to, review by county grand juries and perhaps the sheriff and county administration. And this would help make them independent as well. I don't know how to administer police. That's way out of my portfolio.
I guess it might be out of the Cornell president's portfolio too.
Certainly.
Okay. So the next speaker, please step forward.
My name is Paul Sawyer, and I'm a professor in English. And I also was at Redbud Woods two summers ago, and this report asked us to think of Redbud Woods in the same way one's asked to think of a goldfish when one says, don't think of a goldfish. Don't think of a goldfish. Redbud Woods has nothing to do with this report. It's with your comments, still taken.
Well, I'm just saying the timing, unless the timing of looking at the report preceded Redbud Woods. So
yeah, I understand. But it does, but not think of Redbud Woods makes me unfortunately think of what, of course, would happen to those young people under the new under the changes. And if I understood the changes correctly, the young man in law convinced me, a non-legal expert, that I think I more or less got right. But if I hadn't, please tell me. Under the changes, the people at Redbud Woods could have been picked up and suspended immediately because, suspension is supposed to take place on only very grave reasons, including a threat to the conduct of the university's educational mission. So they could have been picked up immediately, suspended immediately, couldn't they? They would have been suspended on grounds that it was more likely than not that they were committing a threat to the conduct of the university's educational mission. And then the person that would review that decision would also be the person that appointed the pool for the jury, so to speak, also appointed the chair of the committee, appointed the judicial advisor. I mean, the same person would have made all those appointments. So your DA would have been not only Jeff's boss, but also the person that chose the judges and the jury, if I understand this correctly. And the justification for given by Krauss for the preponderance criterion is as follows. She quotes from Stoner and Lowry. my notebook to about, here it is, the clear and convincing and beyond reasonable doubt standard inaccurately treats the accused student as more important than the student who believes she was the victim of misconduct. Clear and convincing and beyond reasonable standard inaccurately treats the accused student as more important than the student from this. That standard protects the innocent. That's what that standard is for. It's to protect the innocent. Innocent is defined as anybody who hasn't been found guilty yet. So that means both the victim and the accused. The fact that this kind of hysterical logic, which sounds like it comes more from the Ed Meese, remember Ed Meese who said that people that arrested are pretty much all guilty and being suffered. That this kind of argument would appear in a report authored by a senior advisor to the president is dumbfounding to me. This is not the Cornell I've ever known. And I would do the road years. And the change that took place in the summer after of 1985, and Professor David Lyons successfully reversed those changes because they were unconstitutional, because they all took place in the summer when there was no. So Cornell has a long history. So I'm contradicting myself now by saying it just doesn't look like Cornell, because it looks like the worst in Cornell. So I would like to send a suggestion back there that the university administration assembly will repudiate this with contempt, not simply with contempt. And finally, the most contemptible thing of all is this velvet glove language, because the folks that we would have gotten read by Woods would also then been asked to understand how they had betrayed the mission of the university. All this touchy, feeling, nurturing kind of language. My personal nickname for this is the velvet glove. Therefore, the velvet glove underneath the velvet glove is something amazing. And those of us who believe in David Scorton, I think that's not an illogical hope. The worst thing he needs is something like this. Following the report of the University Governance Committee, we said, ho, 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 ho. Here's a case of inadequate faculty and community consultation, and then push this under and let him be stuck with this. It sort of reminds me of Nixon pardon. Remember Gerald Ford? So the best thing comes to David Scorton can do is to remove this. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Anthony West. I'm a graduate student here. To answer a question that was raised earlier, the Cornell police answer directly to Mary Beth Grant. I want to...
It's a Woody Allen movie.
We can talk about that. I'd like to remind us of the national context in which this discussion is happening. Someone mentioned that these changes may have been made in response to the Red Bud controversy, which I had nothing to do with personally. I remember it though. But it is happening in the shadow of George W. Bush's precipitous move to curtail civil liberties around the country. And what shocks me is that this is a university. Of all places, this is the place that should defy him. Instead, this proposal essentially proposes to follow suit to some degree. In particular, I'm very bothered by the due process abrogation effectively here. I do think there's a problem with the judicial administrator's office. I think it's not independent enough. The problem is exactly the opposite of that put forward in this proposal. And that's all I can say at this time. Thank you.
I would agree with you that the judicial administrator's office is not independent enough. And I don't want to give my reasons, but I do want to say I firmly agree with you. And anything that goes in the opposite direction is not American.
Right. I don't want to give my reasons, but I do want to say that actually the university is going in the wrong direction because it's already dangerously conflated two functions. One is its function as an educational institution, and the other is its, I don't know what word to use, amateurish or half-baked attempt to play lawmaker or to play law enforcer. If we're going to have a juridical agency on campus that has jurisdiction where Ithaca does not, where Ithaca police don't have jurisdiction, the QB Heights police don't have jurisdiction, then it should be done properly, which means with the full force of the federal constitution in play. At this time, as a graduate student, for example, if I had any problems with any decision made by the judicial administrator, the only option I would have is to sue. If this had happened, say, in the city of Ithaca, where I had a problem with a judge or a police officer, I could sue the city. Here, one would be in the very unhappy position of having to sue one's employer. This is not right. And the report is going in a direction that differs from the right one by 180 degrees.
Rebecca, I'm curious. Where did you go undergrad?
University of California, Berkeley.
And did Berkeley also have the constitutional right granted to any other citizen of California at Berkeley? Was it the same, same thing where you were forced to sue Berkeley if you had any other
options? I honestly had no idea because I had no reason to think about codes or procedures at UC Berkeley.
Okay.
Can I ask, since there hasn't been a single person speaking for the Krauss report, maybe we should allow, I don't know about equal time, but anybody that wants to come up to speak in favor of the Krauss report. Perhaps that's the message we should send President Scorton. Is there is nobody that got this widely distributed an invitation to come to this meeting that could speak in favor of the Krauss report.
Okay, could the next speaker please step forward?
What I wanted to say was...
State your name, please.
Oh, my name is Max Henderson. I'm a graduate here at the university. I informally represent a group of about 650 undergraduate and graduate students who have come together under a group that I founded specifically against the entire Krauss report. Most of my grievances of the report have already been covered. And personally, I really don't see anything in the report that I think is really useful or promotes what I think the university community is trying to do with this judicial system. The couple things that haven't been covered are, one are the fundamental concerns. My concern was the fact that it seems to me that none of the fundamental concerns that Krauss brought up are necessarily best solved or solved at all by the recommendations that she gives. She says that the community members would like a code that sets aspirational standards. I think everybody, or most people who are at the university, knows exactly what this institution stands for. Many of them chose to attend this institution specifically because of the university's aspirational standards, and I think that the university community is, without being too elitist, by and large, better than the average community. I think people, I don't want to say that as in I think we're better. I think that judicial cases at the university are not a huge issue. I mean, I have friends that go to other institutions that have stabbings on campus every couple months, that have robberies all the time. We don't have that here. We have the luxury of having a peaceful campus. And I feel like, yes, we may have delays in resolving cases, especially serious ones, but maybe that is important. Maybe the reason that we have delays in resolving these cases are specifically because of the fact that we are not sure what the material, what the material sort of evidence in those cases are. She states about five cases over the time that I've been here that were especially difficult to resolve, and I think five cases don't necessarily merit all of the reductions in student rights that are proposed by this report. As far as the code being too difficult to read, honestly, I'll say that as a student, I don't think I can count on one hand the amount of people who have read the code before they were accused of having violated part of it. And honestly, I think there's a much easier fix for having a code that's too convoluted than changing the independence of the JAA, changing the entire structure of the judicial system just because our code is a little too complicated. And as part of the university having a lower tolerance for violence, I agree 100%. I just don't see why that tolerance can't be, or that lower tolerance can't be expressed through perhaps harsher penalties or some other sort of pathway besides changing the amount of evidence necessary from clear and convincing to preponderance. I don't know, there's just certain things in here that really didn't make sense to me. One last issue that wasn't touched upon that I thought was very important was the right of students to an appeal by a university board. Even though in extremely serious cases, students do have a right to an appeal in front of the university board, I just don't see how an appeal would be useful at all or why an appeal should even exist if an appeal is nothing more than just handing a summary of the report to one person who then makes a decision and says yes or no. I feel like part of the reason that this report is the way it is because Krauss used to be a judicial administrator, and I'm not sure whether that same bias might be carried over to those appeals. So if you're going to have that, you might as well just remove the right to an appeal entirely for cases that don't involve suspension and expulsion. Other than that, I think everything's covered by my law student and colleague, but thank you.
Would you like to give us that to put in the minutes?
Sure, I can give you a copy. This one's scribbled all over me.
If you could email it to us, that would be great.
Absolutely.
I have a quick question. How do you represent those students?
Actually, it's a Facebook group.
Okay. I thought I figured
yeah,
I wasn't
yeah,
there.
It's like, I don't want to start a Facebook group, but we have about 650 members or so.
Okay.
We actually have a couple members of that Facebook group present here today who have independent statements. So.
Kate.
Yeah, and also I just wanted to add to that and to stress to other members of the UA that I don't think Max gave himself enough credit for the group in all honesty because he only created the group within the past week, I believe, correct?
Yeah, it was last week.
So within the past week, he's come up with 650 students who have all, read the description online and have all agreed that, the Krauss report is something that they are not in favor of, and to get students not only to take action in the sense of, reading it online and then going to all the links and reading the Krauss report and all the proposed changes, and then also joining the group and showing that they really don't support the Krauss report, is really a very, very strong showing among undergraduates with, their feelings about this. So just to stress that, I don't think Max gave himself enough credit for it.
I mean, I thought it was going to be somewhat controversial, it seems that everyone agrees with me, so. Uh-huh. You might have ask the President Scorton to throw it out.
Go ahead. Please.
I'm April 1st.
President Scorton.
I apologize for interrupting the process because I just simply wanted to come by and discuss the field focus more on that. And I do want to wait for the body to have a chance to perform and get the chance. But because I've had experience with this before, I just want to ask a clarifying question to the last speaker, to the speaker, is the sense of your remarks, and I apologize if you don't know whether you're impressed with the patient, is the sense of your remarks that we should be thinking where they are?
I disagree with that. I think the changes are needed
enforcement had any kind of contact with the education
line. Can I ask one other question? Assuming just for a moment that the comment that you made earlier would obtain that there was a sort of universal statement in this direction. I'd like to ask whether this group would have also asked the working group be willing, if there was a sentiment, to make some change, not to leave it at it, to make some change, whether this group would have been interested in having a chance to look at the Northern University has done. These are very, very, very common problems in the country. Both issues. One is adjudicating on campus issues, and the other one is not that the same justice system on campus issues that these are what we're talking about. And so I'm hearing a couple different messages. One message is, please don't go this direction. We're sort of okay as we are. The other message is, don't go this direction, but there's still some things that might be improved by the change.
Well,
I would respond to this. Looking at other campuses across the country and trying to say they're even, or trying to say that they're average in some sense, was not any consolation to me, because in this country, the university system has infinite connections with the executive branch of the government. And that part of the government has made it clear what it thinks of constitutional rights. This is a paranoid thing to say. I understand, but I hope you will take it seriously anyway.
Alice, did you?
Well, I was simply going to say, relative to the president's question of the UA, in fact, it's looking at the code in terms of changes suggested by the Krauss report is not something we need to be asked to do. It's our responsibility by charter. And as I said earlier, you weren't here to hear it. In fact, one of the things that's being pointed out is you're out there and we're here, and all you have to do is ask. We are responsible for basically answering questions and dealing with issues that you raise. That's why we're your representative body. We're supposed to do that. One of the fears I have is that may have been taken away from us, okay? But at least when I read the charter, that's what we're empowered to do. So, simply saying you don't like the Krauss report, throw it out, doesn't change the fact that there may be issues in the current code addressed by the Krauss report that shouldn't be looked at. In fact, if just your 650 students read the code the way it is now, and you never even saw the Krauss report, you'd probably be really upset and come to us and want to change things. Okay? Because that happens to us all the time.
Kathleen?
Body.
Katie?
I just have a question for you, Matt. I've looked at your Facebook group, and it's a very negative, kind of critical perspective on consideration of the code, the crash report. And obviously you looked at it very thoroughly. Are there any positive aspects that you found within the crash report itself?
You know, I agree with some of the goals of the crash report. I believe that there can be some positive changes made by sticking more closely to sort of fundamental issues, and I guess we can speak about this afterwards if you'd like. I feel like, I mean, the fact that the code is too difficult to read, delays in cases, a lower tolerance for violence, more transparency to the community, all those things are important. It's not necessarily that those fundamental concerns are out of line. It is just that I find myself reading the report and seeing two paragraphs on the drawbacks of the proposed change, half a paragraph on how that proposed change will benefit the community, and then a recommendation for the proposed change. There are a couple of things, personally, that I think are important. I think perhaps recasting the system, recasting the code, rewriting the code to have less reliance on criminal law language may be a good idea, but not at the cost of removing the rights of students. I feel like an aspirational statement in the code may be a positive thing, but I don't see why, in addition to the code, including some sort of aspirational statement or introduction, how that wouldn't solve, in a large measure, like 80% that problem, while not taxing any of the Cornell community of their, you know, federal rights. There are, I guess we can discuss them afterwards because I don't really have them lined out, some things that I think are good.
We'd be interested in hearing that.
Sure, if anything would come to mind immediately. One of the things that I think is worth discussing, for example, is the fact that it's difficult to bring to a panel, a hearing board, when a serious case needs to be reviewed by the board. Perhaps that may call for some sort of rethinking of how that board is impaneled and perhaps how often it meets, perhaps a regular meeting instead of only meeting when necessary, maybe a more fitting solution or a different method of choosing the members of the board so that those sort of conflicts don't occur. I don't see how the inability of the board to meet necessitates a complete restructuring of the system, though. Okay. That was pretty much my concern. Just before I go, real quick, and these aren't my words, these are some questions that other students on the Facebook group have raised, and I just wanted to bring them to the assembly because I figured that the majority of students would be unable to attend. Why should Cornell be quicker to convict, quote-unquote, than a system designed to protect the innocent? And why should Cornell deny rights to its indicted, quote-unquote, that the government grants to all, whether they be murderers, sex offenders, or just petty thieves? How does the new proposed system protect the community against abuse on all levels, against faculty, against staff? And what does this change in restructuring imply about the university's faith in its students and faculty that a couple serious cases mandate a complete restructuring and removal of certain what we would consider inalienable rights?
I understand, and I've looked at the Facebook group and stuff like that, like I said. And I think that, especially the forum, has really brought to light some serious problems that are within the crash report.
Sure.
But I think there definitely has not been consideration of the positive aspects of it as well. And I think that that's been throughout all Cornell community, especially what's come out with the Sun and what's come out, in kind of the public. discussion about it. And I think that that's why I think, and we discussed the process, you know, the review process of the code itself with the working group, the University Assembly, and the CJC. And I think that it's equally important to include the working group with the administration's, you know, perspective, as well as the our legislative body as well, just because I think that there also needs to be a positive light of the crash report in consideration as well. And I think that maybe, you know, in, you know, since this is a public forum, you know, for discussion, maybe utilizing Facebook as a vehicle for that, that maybe some, that's something we could, you could consider as well, use that as well. So
I can't speak for anybody except for the students, but I know that among the students there was so much shock at some of the things that were proposed that it was very difficult for a lot of students to see any merit in even some of the suggestions.
It is 6 o'clock. Is there a motion to extend this meeting for another two speakers?
So moved.
Would the next speaker step forward?
Hello, my name is Tommy Thompson. I'm the president of Student Assembly. I represent 13,000 undergrads. I wanted to offer a few dissenting viewpoints, actually. First, I want to start with a metaphor. If you don't use a muscle, it'll atrophy, right? I know there are no medical students, this is the wrong campus, but if you don't use a muscle, it will atrophy. So right now, the UA is kind of beginning to flex its legislative muscle, but basically you have to build it up, right? I think the wrong way to do that is to just spend an hour and a half discussing something as expansive as the Krauss report, and then kind of conclude that we're going to throw it out. And I really appreciate the effort in creating a Facebook group and getting all those people to join. That's exactly what we need. That's how you build up that muscle. That's how you build up the student voice. But I don't think that is enough to say, let's throw out the Krauss report either. What I really think needs to happen is a concerted effort, not just with the undergrads, but the grads, the students, or I'm sorry, the faculty and the staff, trying to get every single person's opinion that wants to say something. And that can't happen in this room. Really, what I'm trying to say is, I would hope that no one leaves this room with any concrete conclusions. And then also something more specific, just a dissenting viewpoint to what this law student said. You mentioned something about Cornell's power off campus and reservations with extending that. Actually, I'm in favor of that because I really look at it this way, and I don't know, maybe you guys would allow a short response from him, but speaking from an undergrad perspective, if I get in trouble for something off campus, I would rather have a record within the university and have it handled in-house than be arrested for something possibly and, you know, have a something that's seen as more permanent.
Just to respond to that very briefly, if a student is involved in some sort of altercation off campus, say the bar fight that I hypothesized earlier, and Cornell chooses to pursue internal disciplinary action, nothing in my understanding, then would preclude the city from also arresting that student and charging them with a crime. The criminal justice system and the internal disciplinary system are separate, and in fact, the Krauss report proposes that we go ahead and pursue internal disciplinary actions while criminal charges are pending on the same action. Now, under the current code, there's a presumption that Cornell waits and sees what the criminal justice system does. There's a principle of avoiding dual punishment. Barbara Krauss eliminates that presumption and says, even if the criminal justice system is also doing something, let's go ahead and do something ourselves.
Or if you just say for one moment, just think about it. I'm sorry. The bar fight is unique because that would be something where it would be very difficult for Cornell to step in, I would say. But say it's something where, you know, if Cornell's jurisdiction is expanded slightly to include some off-campus incidents, that would mean that you have the Cornell peace officers that are actually going to be looking for things that are not on campus, and that's where they would step in. Those are the types of things I'm thinking about, rather than have, you know, the police you know, create a record for you, why not handle it in-house if possible?
Can you give an example?
If you guys could go into the specifics on the feedback mechanism on the Codes and Judicial Committee website, that'd be great, or use the box in the back.
Thank you.
Okay, would the final speaker please step forward?
Hi, my name is Shimon Gao. I'm a freshman in applied engineering physics. When I came to Cornell, or rather when I was deciding on a university to go to, I very much looked at my own high school and said, well, in high school, we don't really have a justice system. We go to the vice principal, we get in trouble, we go to the principal, they make a decision, and we obey by it, and we have no voice. And I looked at Cornell, and I said, Cornell is a university. Cornell is a new place where I can dig in. I'm going to a different country. And I'm going to see how America, the justice system, which has been proclaimed for hundreds and hundreds of years, how we have the right to stay silent. We have the right to an attorney. And the cross report just to eliminate all of this, it doesn't give us, the students, the ability to have a case anymore. It doesn't give us power. It doesn't give us a voice. We are going against attorneys who have been here, who know the justice system in Cornell without our own training. So in our training to a student, as mentioned before, or our students in general, very much have a disadvantage when facing whatever prosecution that are against us. And this comes with a few small points. And one of these is that just letting this report affect our code of conduct is not acceptable because it will cost Cornell a lot, financially and academically. If students from many other countries who are coming to the United States, because we do accept a lot of international students, if students come here with the idea that they're going to have a more free system, that their countries coming from countries like China or countries that don't allow such freedom, they're looking for something. And if they can't find it at Cornell anymore, they're not going to come here. I know when I looked at Cornell, I was considering two universities. I looked at Cornell and I told my parents, I'm coming to Cornell, I'm not applying anywhere else. I'm coming here, I'm not going at all. A lot of students aren't just adamant or ignorant, but they are looking for something when they choose a university. And right now Cornell offers a lot of that. If we change the fundamentals of what this university stands for, we're going to change the fundamentals of our academic integrity, of our financial support from companies or people who believe in the university's goals, and we're going to change Cornell altogether. And these are some of the reasons why this report cannot be allowed to affect our code of conduct right now, because clearly, as we can see, that there's really no one in this room almost that would support this report. It's not a good thing. We don't believe in it. The students don't believe in it. The faculty don't believe in it. I really don't know who would believe that this would really help Cornell. Thank you.
It seems to me you have a warning to us that if we want to be considered a transnational university, we better make sure that we don't export our freedom and import fascism as part of the transnational university.
Well, we are out of time. Thank you, everyone, so much for coming. Please continue to use the feedback mechanisms on the Codes and Judicial Committee website, in the back, email us, and if you want to stay after and you have more concerns, please do. Next week, next Wednesday, is the next University Assembly meeting. But if you have specific concerns, please put them on the feedback mechanism on the website. Oh, the meeting's adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.